Grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's programming is made possible by Dalkey Archive Press, a nonprofit literary press dedicated to publishing works in translation from around the world, including novels by Gustave Flaubert, Carlos Fuentes, Annie Ernaux, and Danilo Quiche, located on the web at dalkeyarchive.com, DALKEY archive.com.
It's 107. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Tom Rogers. Our technical director this hour is Jason Croft. And our guest this hour is somebody that you're familiar with at least once a month on these airwaves, and somebody who can help answer your questions about computers. This is the monthly program that we call Computers and You on the Afternoon Magazine, and Celeste likes to bring in some people who can answer those maybe basic, maybe not so basic questions about what may be wrong about your computers or where we may be going in home and business computing. Peter Kimball is our guest today. He is the educational program coordinator and the lead faculty trainer with the Center for Teaching Excellence on the University of Illinois. And I hope I got that very long title correct.
Yeah, it's hard to fit it on my business card even.
I'd like to see your business card, probably an 8x10 sheet of paper.
Oh, just printed very small.
That's right. But thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Although I am actually here only every other month. I alternate this with Greg Klein.
Right, right.
Don't steal all the credit.
We have a staff, a full staff of people waiting to answer your computer questions once a month. And they may not be here
That's
all the
right.
time, but one person at least once a month is here. And Peter is it today, and he will gladly answer your questions on computers. Give us a call. Our numbers in Champaign-Urbana are 333-9455. If you are outside the local calling area and you want us to answer your questions, give us a free call, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 1-800-222-WILL. Now, Peter, I've noticed a few newscasts lately in the last couple of weeks dealing with digital rights management. Now that we're seeing a lot more vehicles starting up for your ability to grab music or movies or other types of programming off any number of different sources, the attendant questions of managing the rights to all that material comes up, and the question, we're still trying to flesh out where's a fair ground for people, and it doesn't seem like anybody's really happy about where things have been going lately.
They sure aren't. On the one hand, you have a lot of the content owners and providers about Recording Industry Association of America. On the other hand, you have the users and those who think that absolutely everything should be free.
Mm-hmm.
Then those who think that you should pay for practically every use of everything. There are some interesting directions things are going as radio is going to become digital, as television is becoming digital, and all of a sudden computers, which may have been peripheral to broadcasting in the past, are going to be essentially what's built into everybody's tuner.
Yeah, it used to be where, if you wanted to copy something off television, it was going to be, you have to worry about signal quality and all that sort of thing, but with digital format, it's the same as what you could get anywhere else.
And the same thing's going to happen with radio as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, if you wanted to record something off of the radio, for example, you'd had to pretty much either set a timer to turn on your recorder or press the record button. But once it becomes digital and information is sent out with the content saying, here is a song by so-and-so, it's sort of like a radio version of the TiVo. Devices could be easily made. They're not there yet.
And
digital radio wasn't there yet, that can scan all the airwaves and say, I'm looking for a particular song, and when any station plays it, grab it for me.
And even if that technology isn't there exactly, somebody will rush in and do it,
as
thing people tend to do in this business.
Unless, of course, there is legislation that prohibits the manufacture and sale of such devices, which is sort of where the restrictive train of thought is coming from a lot of the content providers who are afraid that this will be yet another vehicle for illegal use of copyrighted material.
How successful has that legislation been, though?
Well, it hasn't been as successful as the recording industry and others would like. It has been more successful than those who promulgate free and open distribution of these. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act has a lot of provisions that make it illegal to sell, possess, purchase a lot of devices that circumvent a lot of these copy protection things, even if your final intent is to just use what's often been called fair use in the home and play it on your own computer and perhaps in a car or on an iPod or something.
Yeah, it seems that every time one of those restrictions starts taking place, you know, the first thing the people out there in the professional, well, the non-professional, sort of the subculture, I guess, would do is to try to circumvent it. You're certainly going to have somebody who's going to try to do that. I suppose that's where one of the funniest things is seeing Napster become one of the enemies of people who want, you know, the free and unfettered trade of intellectual material, because Napster sort of started that way, sort of a rebel.
It did, and the industry came down very hard on it, and the only way they could survive is to essentially acquiesce to the demands of the recording industry and such. And now they are, of course, a copyright digital rights management formatted service where you can have rights to do things only under certain circumstances. You can only record things a certain number of times. It's going to be a continuing battle. There was one, when you mentioned the current state, there was a proposal that the FCC had made at the behest of a fair amount of lobbying by the recording and other content owners that effective July 1st of this past year, it would be illegal to make any devices such as CD-ROM drives and DVD burners and such that didn't incorporate a digital rights management chip that essentially would shut the device down if it received any digitally protected content. The courts, in reviewing that, found that the FCC had gone beyond its authority in mandating that, and so that did not take effect. However, it's certainly possible that Congress will enact such legislation. It wasn't that the court said this is not a constitutional restriction. The court simply said the FCC doesn't have the legislative authority to enact that sort of thing.
Would that extend then to non-hard drive types of things, your flash cards, other types
everything,
of storage? That
everything that can store things digitally would have to respect the broadcast flag or the digital rights management flag or something.
It would be interesting to see exactly how far that would go and, like I said before, how quickly it takes for somebody to try to circumvent it.
Well, and there's always going to be a way of circumventing some of these things. But the goal is, I think, on the part of those who want to add increased protection to make it difficult for the vast majority.
Mm-hmm. Let's take our first call, and your calls again are welcome, 333-9455 and 1-800-222-9455. Caller on line 4 in Eureka, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I know it's hard to diagnose things without actually having seen them, and I asked that with that assumption in mind. The problem is I'm having trouble staying connected to the Internet. I can get email, but it's awfully touch and go. I have a 1998 or 99 compact computer. I wonder if you could just give me a few hints or maybe some just very general advice.
Are you connecting to the Internet via a dial-up line?
Dial-up, yes.
Okay. Is this a problem that has just recently begun to develop?
It's been about the last month, I would say.
One of the first things you could check may actually have nothing to do with the computer system itself, and that is the quality of your phone line. I speak from experience in this case. Back in the days when I was needing to use dial-up before broadband access became available, we had a fairly decent connection when we would dial up and make a connection that way. And then it really degraded. I would either have very slow connection speeds or else it would be lost. And it turned out that it was due to a defective telephone cable. Apparently, over time, moisture had gotten into part of the buried underground section of the telephone line, and I could tell if I just picked up the phone with nobody on it and just, you know, hit a digit so it's silent, there was all this static and hiss.
Uh-huh.
And that will be treated as noise and can cause, in extreme cases, the modem to essentially give up and hang up.
I see.
So that's the first thing to check, to make sure that you don't have, and it does happen occasionally, that you don't have a noisy line. If you can pick it up and there's just dead air there and it sounds quiet, that's good. If it sounds sort of like a little hiss and crackly and static and such, then the phone company will almost certainly take care of that for you, because usually that is not a problem with your interior wiring. That's usually a problem with something that before it gets to the house. So that's the most common experience that people have had with difficulties.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
And thanks for your call. And again, if you'd like to have Peter Kimball discuss any questions or situations you have with your computer, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455.
I'll toss out one other thought for that last caller. Mm-hmm. Depending upon how recent a modem he has, now it may well be a modem that's simply built into the computer system, or it may be an external modem, but if it's more than a few years old, more recent dial-up modems have much more robust, much more capable error correction algorithms and can hang on to noisier lines for longer periods of time. So that might be a problem.
It might be an older modem that just doesn't have that ability.
That just doesn't have the same tolerance.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting. In computers around 1998 or 99 are... they're in service in a lot of places.
They are.
They're very slow and not what a lot of people would expect with today's machines.
Kind of like dinosaurs. You know, that brings up one other thing that I wanted, talking about all of the moisture that can affect the phone lines and such. Mm-hmm. And one of them, and this also comes to mind from the recent events along the Gulf Coast, the importance of people making backups of information they want to keep. If you've got all your digital photographs stored, now that so many of them are using digital cameras, what do they do with that? Well, they load them onto their computer. Mm-hmm. What happens if that hard drive fails? And in many cases, some people who may be doing backups occasionally, and you should essentially burn them to a CD-ROM or something, but suppose you are in some sort of a disaster, as many of the folks in the Gulf Coast were.
You lose the hard drive and you lose the CD.
They lose practically everything. The general advice is you keep a backup set off-premises, but of course some of the problems for folks down there is that their off-premises site were also underwater, even if they were doing it. Mm-hmm. So nothing is forever, and you can make it last a little bit longer if you think about it. I would guess that 90% of the people listening out there who have those sorts of files can't tell when the last time they made a backup was, if ever.
Now, there are online sites where I think you can still store a lot of things, correct?
Yes, and you can find those.
I'm thinking of the picture sites, which are pretty obvious.
Sure.
Flickr and a couple of sites like that. But how about just plain old data?
There are other locations, and you can find many of those if you just go and do a Google search for backup sites and backup services and such. Some of them are relatively inexpensive. Some of them are free.
All right. Let's take a call in Bloomington now on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hi. I thought I'd comment on the fellow who was having trouble earlier with his dial-up dropping out. I had the same problem for a while, and it turned out not to be the phone lines at all, but there was a telephone became defective and messed things up. And once I unplugged that telephone, everything worked fine.
That's an excellent point, and I should have mentioned that as well. Certainly, just as you can have a connection lost if somebody inadvertently picks up another line while you're in an online session, phones that have become defective in one way or another that have failed and are generating noise on the line can also cause that. That's an excellent point. Thank you for bringing that up.
And I know that having had dial up up to not so long ago, that even every individual connection, I guess, could pose a problem. A phone line,
that's
a
true.
Cable, Cat 5, or not that, but
and the same thing is true in terms of the phone lines for people using DSL connections, because mm-hmm. that's coming over your phone line, and if there's some internal problem, or if one of the phones doesn't have the little filter on it, you can also have problems with the DSL connection being stable.
Interesting if you need both dial-up and DSL in the same place, but I guess that happens.
Well, but the DSL is simply coming over your phone line, and
right.
It's the same phone line, so they don't have to run into the other.
Right. Your questions for Peter Kimball, 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. We're talking about older computers. A lot of people are still running computers that are fairly aged, and maybe they're thinking about how to buy a new one and then what to do with the old one. What kinds of options are available for people who have computers that they may not they do depreciate quite rapidly, and you have to figure out a way to get rid of them somehow.
Yeah, there is some statistics that have been seen that I've seen. I can't recall the specific details now, but there are incredibly large amounts of landfill space that are being taken up now by discarded computers, discarded monitors, many of which are problematic because there are trace amounts of very toxic materials in those, some of the heavy metals and such. There are some recycling centers around in Champaign-Urbana. Max certainly is one of them, and there are perhaps others as well. The best way to recycle a not-that-old machine, this wouldn't really apply to a 1990 or a 1992 machine, but reuse is the best way. And so if there is a school or something, if it's a usable thing, and if it's a machine that can run a current operating system, a relatively recent version of the Mac OS or of Windows, then some schools may appreciate those as well. You can always inquire, or churches or other nonprofits.
Is there sort of a dividing line as far as which Windows OS might be a little too old?
I would say these days, if it can't run at least Windows 2000, it's probably not going to be that welcome by whoever has to maintain the computer or wherever it's going to be received. So an old machine that's running Windows 95 or Windows 98, if that's all it can do, may not be that welcome, but you can certainly inquire.
We have a call for Peter Kimball on line one in Champaign County. Good afternoon.
Hi, very apropos. I'm away from this computer right now. It's at a public access point where audio is very important. It's, I believe, an 8200 series HP designed for Windows 98. Someone in this open access area installed 2000 on it, and now the motherboard sound part of it is no longer recognized, and HP update and Windows update don't find anything wrong, but when you go to, control panels and look around, you find that, basic part of the software and the sound isn't installed. I think it's under multimedia. So I'm wondering the number of routes. I can't remember which one's more doggy, ME or 2000.
ME
probably
is...
Probably getting a sound card and getting somebody to donate an old, appropriately old, compatible sound card, and then finding a driver would probably be the...
Yes, that's almost certainly the problem, is that there is not an appropriate driver, or the Windows machine doesn't know about the driver for that particular machine. What you can do to see if the machine even recognizes it is you choose to go into system properties, or the properties of My Computer.
It says that thing isn't installed. What is some basic fundamental audio part? All the other audio systems, I forget what it is exactly, but something says this is not installed, and it's a minus two or a system flaw.
Well, you'll even see if you go into something called the Device Manager, you can even see what it thinks you have, and there's typically a big question mark there if it can't really talk to it. In answer to your question, it's ME that is the dog. You want to stay away from ME.
So 2000 is probably more appropriate for this. There seems to be enough memory and all that. It's just that...
Yes, and that would be...
I was just wondering, short of somebody, installing the sound card, which doesn't look terribly convenient from what you have to pull out the fan and all this stuff to get at it, but it's just to put in a PCI card. But I was just wondering if there was anything that could prompt the built-in audio to be recognized.
There should be. You should be able from... Now, it may not be automatically detected, but if you go to the... You said it's an HP computer?
Yeah.
And the sound card is almost... Or the sound functions are almost certainly integrated onto the motherboard, the main circuit board. And so from the HP site, there should be... I have not looked at the HP site lately, but there should be a location where you can... enter the model number of that machine, and then...
In there, I didn't get very far.
We're not able to find any drivers for...
No, in fact, I said at the beginning that I did some kind of HP diagnostic, and that everything was cool, but it was not really.
Well, then the other thing that you can try to do is from the Device Manager, which I take it you know how to get to...
In there, yeah.
Uninstall the audio driver.
Well, Well, see, it doesn't even recognize anything.
Oh, it doesn't recognize anything at all.
Yeah.
So it thinks it has no audio installed.
Again, I'd have to refresh myself, but...
Well, check if you've got any kind of an indication for audio. See if you can uninstall that device. Because it's clearly not working, so uninstalling it isn't going to do any problem. It's possible for it to get into a state where the device driver, the little bit of software that talks to the audio portion of the card, is not appropriate, but it's not being recognized by the computer as a particular problem, although it obviously doesn't work. And so totally uninstalling the audio device or uninstalling the audio card, if you have that option, then start Windows up again. And if it's Windows 2000 or Windows XP, it should recognize, hey, there's a device here that there's no driver for, and hopefully will then prompt you for the permission to install a driver. And my guess is that the generic driver that comes with Windows 2000 or Windows...
You would think it would work on that model.
Yeah.
Okay,
But try if you've got any choice to uninstall the driver.
Possible route, because I don't think that you can even get that far as to have some, it doesn't recognize anything to uninstall. So,
yeah, that may be as you say, it would take a fair amount of sleuthing around, and you've already done some of that.
I think the most expeditious probably way is to find someone to donate a cheap old stone card.
Yeah, that would certainly, and it shouldn't be that hard to plug
and
in.
Find the driver for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Or even a new sound card, because they're not that expensive unless you get one of the really high-end ones.
Yeah, well, this is a low-budget sort of place, and I don't want to put anything that's, it'd probably be fairly easy to find something that's
$10.
Time appropriate for the device. For the whole computer. I mean, why have so much more capability than it possibly use? All right, thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call. And again, your questions are welcome for Peter Kimball, 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. This is our monthly Computers and You segment on the Afternoon Magazine.
Unfortunately, it can become increasingly difficult to find updated drivers and such for computers as they age.
Are there certain sites? I remember, and I can't remember the name of the site, but there was one place... Yeah, I think oldversion.com or something like that, where they may not have drivers, but they do have older versions of some popular programs where they aren't quite as huge size-wise as the current programs, and people may even prefer older versions of certain programs.
Right. I'm sure there are. It would take a bit of a Google search to find that. I don't think oldversion.com is it, because I just bounced on another.
I hope you got nothing illicit or anything like that.
Yeah, I think your computer just here isn't going to work anymore.
Great.
Other than that. Although now it does say oldversion.com, so that's what it was found here.
That's what it was, I guess.
Okay, yep, it is. Okay, so we have a number of things here. We just might have, I don't know what happened before. So that and other sites that you might find by just doing a search for old version via Google.
Let's go to line four and a call in Paris. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have recently purchased and installed Dell Computer 2400 and a Hewlett-Packard digital camera that's 3 years old, and I'm wondering what's the best photo system. I am a very novice photographer, so I want something easy to use to work with the digital photos.
To do some basic retouching and
right.
that sort of thing? My general recommendation, although this is not a free program, but it's relatively inexpensive, is from the same company that makes the high-end program, Adobe, and it's something called Photoshop Elements, which is their home version. It's
Photoshop Elements?
Photoshop Elements.
And,
now, the full-fledged Photoshop program is much more major and much more expensive than anything you would need.
And more than I would use, undoubtedly.
At least to start with, yes, certainly.
Now, can I download that from Adobe? Or?
You can probably download that. Yes, either would work. The other thing that you could do is, of course, from Google, just do a search for photo retouching, and you'll find all sorts of various programs available. But certainly one of those that is very highly reviewed and highly thought of is the Adobe Photoshop Elements.
Okay.
There are probably other good ones, and including some that are probably shareware and or freeware. I know there were some that used to be shareware, but now have a charge that's almost as much as Photoshop Elements.
Is there a program that came with the camera? Sometimes the CDs for the cameras also carry, you know, very...
Yes, but it's pretty elementary.
Yeah.
Some cameras, a little more
detailed than that.
Yeah. And some cameras actually had come, I know that Adobe occasionally bundled Elements or its predecessor with some digital cameras. But I would guess that you probably could download it from the Adobe site. And we may well hear others this afternoon call in with their own particular favorite programs for a Windows platform, of course.
I realize everybody has their own preferences, but thank you for the advice.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Let's go to cell phone on line one. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. I've got a dial-up, my ISP is Juno, and I keep getting I'm running Windows XP.
Yes.
And I keep getting this when I dial up. First off, it keeps saying that we're having a problem running scripts. Do you want to continue running scripts? Oh, I've also got Zone Alarm. And I think somehow the Zone Alarm is causing me to have problems with my JavaScript, and I was wondering if you could give me any kind of advice or anything.
So you're getting this message when you go to a website and it says you're having difficulty with the script, or does it an error in the script?
When I log into the service to start with, into Juno to start with, to get online.
And then it gives you a little dialog box that says there's a problem on this page or something like that?
Problem running scripts on this page. Do you want to continue? And I didn't have that problem before I ran Zone Alarm, but now that I'm running Zone Alarm, it seems to be... related.
Now, if you on that dialog box, if you presumably have the choice to click yes, continue, and then does everything work from that point on?
Well, sometimes it does, and sometimes another maybe as many as four or five dialog boxes will pop up, and I'll have to click through all of them, and it doesn't seem to matter whether I click yes or no. Eventually, I'll get down to the page, and it doesn't seem to be degraded in any sense. But
once you've gotten to the page, which I presume is the kind of the Juno dial-in welcome page.
Right, it's kind of a home page.
Right. Once you leave that page and you're surfing, do you get those sorts of messages?
No.
Well, there's a couple of possibilities. One is that it's quite possible that there is some script errors on Juno's own page, which is their difficulty, because you're not getting that with other pages. And other pages certainly have various kinds of scripting going on. It's fairly easy for you to test whether it's Zone Alarm, although you wouldn't want to spend a lot of time with Zone Alarm disabled. You can totally disable Zone Alarm and then see if you still have those... script messages come up, and if you do, you've pretty much eliminated Zone Alarm as a factor.
Right. But and I do want to run Zone Alarm.
Sure, but this would just be for a test to see if indeed it is Zone Alarm related or not. You'd only want to do that temporarily just as a test, and then, of course, turn Zone Alarm back on, which is, for those who are wondering, a firewall program, a protection program to prevent malicious programs from trying to take over your machine and such. If indeed it is not related to Zone Alarm, the error still occurs when you temporarily on a trial basis try running without Zone Alarm active, and it only happens on the Juno page, I would strongly suspect a problem with the Juno page, and then talking to Juno's customer support or technical support line would probably be appropriate. I'm sure they've got some way of contacting them and explain that this only happens when I'm on the Juno page. Another thing that you might check is once you're out surfing and you don't have any error messages, try going back, just entering the address of the Juno page, whatever the initial HTTP address is, and see if you generate those errors when you come back to it or if it's something that only happens during the startup sequence.
All right. Well, You're not really telling me what to do if it does turn out to be only on the... you said to go to Juno, but what if it has to do with Zone Alarm? That one I don't quite understand.
Well, Zone Alarm, depending upon, are you using the free version of Zone Alarm? Okay. It's still got a lot of capabilities, and though I believe that script blocking is probably one of them, what I don't quite understand without really taking a look at it is why it would be affecting one page or one site and not others, which almost undoubtedly many of the other sites that you hit in the course of a normal surfing session probably also use scripts. So well, I think you're going to have to isolate it. If it is actually Zone Alarm related, then it could be you may want to look at the Zone Alarm settings, and if there's, I can't test on this machine because it's not installed, but there may well be a setting to see or a setting that controls whether it should block scripts or not. Now, this is once you've pretty much isolated it as a Zone Alarm problem, i.e. the problem goes away when you disable Zone Alarm and it comes back when you re-enable it. Then it is a Zone Alarm setting program. It is probably not a flaw in the Zone Alarm program itself, but Zone Alarm may also, in fact, Zone Alarm does have, if not a call-up, a free email support, and you could say, here's the problem I'm having. It only happens when Zone Alarm is enabled. What do you suggest? And they could say, oh, well, you set your, you know, whatever the suggestion they may have would be.
Well, is there a security angle to the particular JavaScripts on a web page that Zone Alarm might want to monitor or?
Well, if you're keeping yourself updated with the latest Windows updates and you've got virus protection, I don't think that there's really going to be too much of an issue. So if Zone Alarm is indeed being a little bit overly paranoid, that one particular function, probably, again, making sure that you are up to date with system updates and virus protection, is probably not very essential. I don't have any script protection on my machine.
All right, thank you.
And thanks for your call. Let's move on to line two, a caller in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yeah,
this might be a little dumb question to ask because I'm not computer savvy or everything. I went through two computers, but the main thing is I'm wondering why don't the manufacturers of the computers give some basic information for people that are not familiar with computers on what the keyboard signs mean and like the F numbers and everything like that. I had to find out all this information by buying different books, and they're very vague. Those books I bought are very vague, say, what the F numbers start, how do you use those things? Because other than talking to people, I didn't know that there was even a calculator, you know, the numbers for doing bookkeeping on it. And it seems like all the manuals don't send out a general booklet about what the keyboard stands for. So I'll hang up and listen to your answer on the radio.
Okay, well, the basic answer as to why they don't do it is money. It's much cheaper for them to have the files online, or if they've got them available all, rather than package books, which they have to print and ship. So it's a matter of economics. There used to be a lot of very good user manuals that came with most software. Now that's not the case.
And help files are sometimes good, sometimes horrible.
And you have to know where to find them, and it's much more difficult to find the right place in a help file. You've probably come across books such as Computers for Dummies and such. I'm not impugning anybody by saying, you know, it's Computers for Dummies. That's just a series of the books, which will describe a lot of that. But you're certainly correct in saying that the function keys, the F1 through F12 keys, are not really well defined because different programs can apply different uses to those. Mm-hmm. So one program, you may be able to use F5 to repeat the last thing you did or to launch a browser. Another program may use F5 for something entirely different. In terms of there being a calculator and other services that are on there, boy, I guess it would just have to be some of those introductory computer books.
There are still introductory computer classes for people who are getting in right at the ground level, too, you know, in-person classes that you may be able to take in your community.
Yes.
Libraries and things like that. Often
libraries, community colleges often have that sort of a evening class on that sort of thing.
All right. Let's go on to line four, caller in Effingham. Good afternoon.
I'm using Microsoft Money, and I'm in the report and chart gallery, and I want to use the program, specific program there that says who's getting my money. But when I click on it, I get an error message that says there has been an error reading or writing the file. How do I get out of that?
Hmm.
It just says to click OK, but I can't get into the program.
So this is just one particular function. Do the rest of the programs
I can get into.
Okay. I'm at a bit of a loss here because I don't use Microsoft Money, so I'm not familiar with the details of the program. One of the things that you can try doing is that error message that you receive. You can go to a Microsoft site and they have a resource that is available to everybody called their knowledge base, where all the various problems and error messages and such have articles in many cases saying, well, this is what can cause this and this is one way of dealing with it. And so that's, if I were helping a neighbor or something, that would be my first place to go. It's quite possible that one particular file has somehow been damaged, and when it tries to read it, it's not able to, and so the program sort of gives up on that one file. If you go to Microsoft.com, and then there'll be a search. There are two routes you can go. You can then move towards by selecting a product and just find you might have to dig down a little bit to get to the Microsoft Money product. Or you can simply type in the search box that's on the main page, knowledge base, just two words, knowledge base, which will give you a list of documents, one of which is search the knowledge base, and then you can go to the knowledge base page and you'll have a button that says advanced search, and you can specify which product, and you could say, oh, I want to search for Microsoft Money, and then you could say, what do you want to search for, and you could try typing in part of the error message, like file, just be literal, write down what exactly it says, and type in part of that and see what it can come up with. So that's the suggestion that I would.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for your call. Both of us looked at each other and said, Microsoft Money. I don't think we use Microsoft Money,
yeah.
But there are many common links through a lot of programs that you can hopefully find some answers to, having even not dealt with it before.
Facetiously, if only I had enough money to be able to need Microsoft Money, I'd be in great shape.
Microsoft broke doesn't quite work, does it?
No, it doesn't.
One question, and before we go on, we do have some time left for your calls, your questions. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. You can call the local 333 number from anywhere. You'll just have to pay. As a long-distance call. But that's why we give you the 800 number. I was reading along in a couple of publications talking about certain attacks on certain programs, and everybody's familiar with constant attacks on Windows and Internet Explorer and Outlook and the popular Microsoft programs. I noticed that there's one that affects Firefox now. The reason some people get Firefox is to avoid those type of attacks,
yes.
But it's not immune.
No, it's not immune. And in fact, I happen to come across, I get a lot of mail from various companies, and one of them that just came from Symantec, which is the company that bought up Peter Norton, and it's Norton Antivirus and such. It's their semi-annual Internet Security Threat Report, trends from January through June of 2005. And one of the interesting things that they found was that the browser with the most vulnerabilities during that period was Mozilla Firefox.
No kidding.
With 25 vulnerabilities, while during the same time period, Internet Explorer had 18.
Interesting.
Which is interesting, and it just goes to show that software is sufficiently complex that you, whether you're using Firefox or Internet Explorer or Opera or any browser, you need to keep on top of getting updates. The good news is that these were vendor-recognized flaws, and the Mozilla Foundation and Firefox have
and they get
fixes
on
for them.
And, of course, unlike Microsoft, where you have Microsoft employees doing all this, this is all a volunteer kind of program where people get on it and work on it on their own time. Let's go to line one now. We have a full bank phone calls. Champaign, line one, good afternoon.
Hi. I was wondering if there's a program similar to Microsoft Access that works on an Apple computer.
Certainly. Access is a database program, and
right.
there are many database programs. One of the more popular ones, it's a fairly simple program to use, is FileMaker. FileMaker is pretty well known. FileMaker Pro, I think, is its first name. FileMaker, I think it's in version 8 now, and it's certainly in its most recent versions as capable as Microsoft Access. And it has the additional advantage that you can have the FileMaker program running on both Windows and Macintosh platforms and transfer the files between them. And there are many others as well.
All right.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And thanks for your call. Let's move on to line 2, a caller in Champaign as well. Good afternoon. Hi, line 2. Or up line 4. Let's try line 4.
Hello.
Go ahead, line
yes.
4.
Yeah, hi. Got a question for you real quick here. I got a Micron laptop that I bought, XP loaded on it. I had a little bit of trouble with it, so I tried to reload XP, and now when it boots up, it asked me whether I want to, two versions of XP comes up on the boot version before Windows XP actually loads in. I've tried to go into control panel to systems to advanced and get rid of the one because it leads nowhere. And I'm just wondering whether or not I need to go back in and do an F-disk and delete the partition and then go ahead and try and reload XP, or what's your suggestion?
Well, you certainly could do that. That's kind of the extreme route. The problem is that there are two partitions there, as you've discovered, because you can set up a computer to boot into multiple operating systems. There
right.
are programs that can manage those for you that will allow you to modify that. Partition Magic is one of them. It does much more than just that, but there are probably, and again, I would have to, I'd have to look this up, but there are certainly utility programs. That's what you're seeing is a screen that is coming up from a part of the hard disk that is read before it even begins loading up Windows, obviously.
Correct.
And so those choices, for whatever strange reason, during the reinstall, you might have inadvertently said that you wanted to install this, in addition to, rather than totally replace your current version. It's awfully easy to.
That's what I'm thinking probably would happen.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether or not I need to go, like, say, an F-disk. I mean, I'm ready to go ahead and reinstall the whole system against WP. I won't lose anything, precious. So that's.
Well, that's certainly going to. It's going to be a little more time consuming, but it's going to. Avoid the necessity to go out and find a program to manipulate
right.
that particular partition.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for your call. Let's move to line 2. Let's get another couple calls. Up line 3. Line 3 in Hersher. Good afternoon.
Hello. We have a fairly late model computer. It's about 14 months old or so. And we went on to a wireless broadband internet service, and we've been having all kinds of trouble. The service will slow down, and then you unplug the power source, and it will, and plug it back in, and it will speed back up again. And our service keeps saying it's in the computer, and we've actually had it in 2 or 3 times now to to the place where we bought it. And they've gone so far as to even erase the hard drive and start over from scratch, and we still end up with these problems. And I guess I'm kind of wondering, where do I go from here?
So I take it you're probably in a semi-rural area, or at least you don't have any access to the standard cable or DSL lines. So you're getting
right.
your I won't mention any names, but something like an example, not necessarily the one you're using, Prairie iNet or something of that
yes.
sort. Okay. And power cycling the receiver fixes the problem temporarily?
Yes.
Until, 5 minutes go by or 10 minutes or?
Yeah, something like that. It seems like it can work all right for a while, and then it'll slow down and just almost lock up. And then you unplug that power source, and it comes right back full speed again.
Hmm. Do the folks at the wireless service provider firm give you any advice? I'm thinking, although, again, I the computer doesn't seem to be at fault because that's all been restored. And it's quite possible that it's not the internet service provider that's at fault, because when you unplug and power cycle, essentially. Have you attempted, there are two possibilities, I guess, that I'm thinking of. One is the device that you're power cycling itself. Have they swapped that out and given you another one to see if it's a flaw in that?
No, they haven't.
That may not be likely, but it's certainly one chain that is a particular problem. And another thing that I'm thinking of, and you'd need to pretty much talk with the internet service provider about this, it's quite possible that some of the settings, the buffer size, the amount of space that's held aside to receive and transmit the internet packets back and forth, there could be some timing or some buffer size values that are not ideal and eventually fill and start causing various problems. So
okay.
It could be as simple as some settings, but I'm using simple kind of in verbal quotation marks because knowing just what those settings are, if indeed that is a potential problem, is something you'd have to get from the internet service provider.
Okay. I guess I was even wondering if it's the point where we just need to get a new computer and start over, even though this is only about 14, 16 months old.
Well, that shouldn't be it, but that is something else. If you have a friend or somebody who's got a laptop computer that's fairly recent, what you certainly could do is just borrow that or bring it over, plug it into your internet service there, and see if the same problem happens on the other computer.
Okay.
And that will, if it does happen, then that certainly gives you a much more information, whether it happens or not. If it happens on the new computer, then you know the problem is not in the computer. If it doesn't happen on the new computer, you know it is a problem with the computer or the settings on that machine, and
okay.
That will certainly give you much more information to pursue either with the internet service provider or with the folks from whom you bought the computer.
Well, wireless broadband sure spoils you after dial-up. And
oh, yes. Any kind of broadband does. There's no going back.
No, there isn't.
Well, thanks for calling in, and we hope we at least got you toward answering your question.
Yeah, it's essentially, like in many problems, it's try to isolate where the problem is by swapping in things that do work or having multiple choices and eventually narrowing it down.
Another reason why broadband and wireless are so nice is that you can just bring in somebody else and they can bring in a computer of their own and do the same thing, and you don't have to worry about plugging anything in. So
it's true.
All right. Peter Kimball, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Always a pleasure.
Always informative. You learn something new in talking about other people's questions and problems.
And there's always more to learn.
All right. Thanks for your time. It is 7 minutes before 2 o'clock. We have settlement prices now from the Chicago Board of Trade and Mercantile Exchange. Board of Trade numbers now. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Tom. From the Chicago Board of Trade on this Thursday afternoon, a little rally across the grains floor. The wheat with the biggest gains today, up 7 cents for the December contract, 334 and a half, the high, the low at 327, a settlement price at 332 and a quarter, up 7. Most of that likely on the idea that Hurricane Rita will stop some of the export shipments for wheat, which primarily come out of the Texas ports rather than out of the New Orleans ports, where grains like corn and soybeans generally are shipped. March contract in the wheat pit up 6 3/4 today, had a high of 347 and a half, a low of 341, settlement price at 346 and a half. Once again, it was up 6 3/4. The May futures 7.5 cents higher at 354. On high price, the low at 348 and a settlement price 7.5 higher for the May wheat at 353 1/2. July contract, a settlement 359 1/2, up 7.5. 360 1/2 the high, the low at 354 for the harvest month for next year in the soft red winter pit at the Chicago Board of Trade. September futures 365 1/2 the high, the low at $3.60 1/2. Settlement price up on that high at 365 1/2. And they were up 7.5 on the day. December corn futures 210 the high, the low at 206 1/2. Settlement price at 208 1/4, up 1 3/4. The March at 222 1/4 high, low at 219. Settlement price at 220 1/2, up 1 1/4. And the May futures 229 1/4 in the corn pit for the high. The low at 226 1/2. Settlement price there at 228 1/4. They were up 1.5 cents. July contract 235 3/4 the high, the low at 33 even. Settlement price at 234 1/2, up 1 1/4. And next year's December corn 250 1/4 the high, the low at 248. Settlement price at 249 1/4. They were up 3/4. December oats a 160 3/4 settlement price, 1 3/4 higher, with a high of 161 1/4 and a low at 160. The March contract in the oat pit at 166 1/4. On the last trade of the day, up 1 1/4. Soy complex now, nearby November beans, $5.85 the high. Low at 577 1/2, settlement price at 580 1/2. They were up 2 3/4. January futures 593 1/2 the high, the low at 586 1/2. Settlement price for the January soybeans at $5.88¾. They were up 2 cents. The March futures up a 2¾. $5.96¾ settlement price with a high of $6.01 and a low at $5.94. May futures $6.06. The high, the low at $5.99. Settled $6.02. Up 2½ cents. And July, $6.10, the high, the low at $6.03, settlement price at $6.06, they were 2½ higher. Bean meal, October contract, $173.50, the high, the low at $171.60, settlement price at $172.10, they were down 50 for the day, and December bean meal at $175, down 60 cents. Bean oil futures, $23.45, the high, the low at $23.03, settlement price at $23.32, they were up another 40 cents today, and December bean oil up 35 at $23.56. From the Mercantile Exchange, most of the trade there on the higher side for the day as well. September futures, at least the settlement prices, up 97.5 cents in the nearby feeder cattle. 115.45, high low at 114.55. Settlement, once again, 115.45. They're up 97.5 for the SEP feeder cattle. October contract, 113.95, the high. Low at 112.60, settlement price at 113.82.5. They were $1.25 higher, and the nose were up a dollar. 112.95, the final price of the day. The high at 113, the low at 111.80. September live cattle did not trade for the day. The October contract, an 86.35 high, low at 85.27.5, and a settlement price at 86.25, up 60 on the day. And December futures for next year in the live cattle pit, 88.55, the high, the low at 87.50. Settlement price at $88.40. They were up 52.5 on the day. October lean hogs, 65.85 the high, the low at 64.80. Settled 65.65, 77.5 higher. And the December contract down a nickel today. 62.70 for the lean hogs on the high, the low at 61.85. That December contract settled at 65.15. They were once again a nickel lower. February lean hog, 64.40 the high, the low at 63.65, settled 64.35, up 40, and the April contract 12.5 cents higher at 63.17.5. Bellies finished the day with the February contract up the limit, 85.35 the high, the low at 83.90, and the February pork belly settled at 85.35. Once again, they were up 2 for the day. During the 2 o'clock hour, we'll be preempted to bring you the installation of the new president of the University of Illinois, but the closing market report will be airing live to the website at will.uiuc.edu. You can go to our homepage at am/agriculture and listen to the closing market report if you'd like, or you can always pick it up as a podcast later on, or simply go to the webpage after we're done with the closing market report around 3:15 or so and hear all of the programming at that time. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a minute and a half before 2 o'clock. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. Online at will.uiuc.edu and on the air at AM 580. I'm Tom Rogers, sitting in for Celeste Quinn on the Afternoon Magazine. Jason Croft is our technical director. The producer of the Afternoon Magazine is Harriet Williamson. Look for some thunderstorms possible this afternoon. Our forecast for Illinois and Indiana.